All right, good afternoon. This is your happy hour, or your first happy hour session, maybe it's your second for the lucky ones. And I'm trying to count 676 registered attendees here. I'm coming up short, so I thought we'd just wait for like an hour and see if, all right. You each count for, something like eight or nine
eight,
people.
Eight, nine, yeah.
So thanks for sticking it out today. I'm Paul Rich. It's my partner in crime, Jacqueline Hironaka, from the Office 365 team. And we're here to, I'm here to try and give you something to talk about during cocktail hour, because I'm not gonna throw features and technical details at you. I'm gonna throw ideas at you and challenge those ideas. So, and I'll leave Jacqueline to give you the technical stuff, which she and I are both working on and have been working on for quite some time. So that kind of jumps into why spend roughly an hour of your time with us. We've been working on this for a while, and we kept at, kind of a lot of propeller head stuff and then back out and go, why do people actually want to come here and hear us talk? And so I thought I would try and give you some real human reasons. One of which is the area I'm going to focus on, which is this mythology that's kind of sprung up in the last couple of years, maybe a little longer than that, about cloud encryption. Has a fair amount of myth, some truth, some not, and it's easy to get fooled by the things that you see and read. And I've been doing this for quite a long time now, and I've seen almost probably all of the main myths, and I want to help you cut through that stuff. Those of you who are Who fans, I thought that that music was very apropos for this session, so I added that kind of just because I enjoy the Who as well. Doing that, allowing you to not have to become an encryption expert to cut through these things that you see or read or hear from your coworkers or from, I've got some periodicals that I'm quoting from here. No offense to any journalists, I picked on things that I found to be worthy of criticizing. So the second thing is, as I've spent the last maybe 2 years with CISOs, CIOs, their staff members talking about this problem space, I would say 99% of the time, the problem or the conversation starts out with a solution and not a problem statement. And so there's already leaping to a conclusion, trying to solve something that's not even the right problem to solve. And then there's a lot of grief, and that could be the grief of losing credibility because you solve the wrong problem, and then it comes out later, that you didn't actually deal with the requirements that the CISO or the CIO or the CEO had. And then the grief of having to go back and unwind that and try to figure out something else. So then Jacqueline's going to cover, as I said before, the specifics of what she and I are working on for encryption evolution and the BYOK roadmap specific to Office 365, Today, Exchange, Skype, SharePoint. So with that, that's why spend the hour. I hope that's why you're here. If not, I still try and give you something to think about. And since this is my session, at least the first half of it's my session, I'm going to define some terms that I'll use the way I want to define them, just so that we can level set and we don't have to argue about what these things mean. And the first one is the term ownership. And that's part of the O in BYOK is about ownership. And I wanted to point out that ownership in many aspects of life doesn't mean total possession or total control. And the examples that just came to mind immediately for me were things like your title to your car or maybe the rights to some music that are on your hit record. You own those things, but the music is on my device and I can stop it and start it when I want to, right? So ownership, control, possession are not always equivalent and they don't have to be equivalent. And the next one is layered on top of that, BYOK means providing a key that you own, not necessarily fully control or possess. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. but it means providing your key to use with a cloud service. So it also doesn't imply that every key that the cloud service is using to encrypt data is your key. You know, your key may be the most important one that, you know, exists in that chain, but it doesn't mean that you're providing every key that the cloud service uses. So another concept that I found recurred through all of the myths that I encountered was the, I'll say, the inability to clearly describe the problem you're trying to solve. And I mentioned that, I think, a little bit earlier. In fact, I asked this kind gentleman doing the audio here not that long ago in the video if he could put, you know, something over here that I wanted to see during the presentation. And he said, well, he couldn't do that, but he could put it here. And I realized this was actually what I wanted, but I thought, oh, he can't do that, so I'll ask for the specific solution rather than just giving him the problem, which is, can I see what I want to see over here, right? So my kids do that. I want a car. My teenage daughter wants a car. What's the problem you're trying to solve? Well, I need to get from point A to point B whenever I want to. You know, conveniently, my friends can't always drive me. How about a Uber or Lyft, you know, account that I provide for you instead of a car? So instead of giving me the solution, just saying, here's the problem I want to solve. And this runs throughout the theme of IT and technology, and it's no different in the BYOK space. So the hint is, if you're including a solution, then it probably isn't the problem that you're trying to solve. So just something to keep in mind as we go through these questionable facts or myths. So the first one, and I'm kind of putting these somewhat in chronological order, first one I encountered was in highly regulated industries. And the statement was, my regulators essentially mandate that I own my encryption keys. So we'll examine whether that's true or not. The second one, more generally, unregulated, regulated industries, encryption allows me to control all access to my data. And I'll quiz you, see what your answers are to these things as I go through these. Somewhat a corollary to that, BYOK prevents cloud personnel from accessing my data. These are direct quotes. Okay. This one, I provide the attribution for. Again, no offense meant to any reporter or journalist. These are just, you know, culling all of the internet for where the BYOK statements and the cloud encryption statements appear. And this person equated it to locking your car but leaving the keys in the door. So we'll kind of analyze whether that's an appropriate analogy for BYOK if the cloud provider has your keys. And then this one's really a direct corollary of the previous one, which is telling you that if your cloud provider is participating in any way, shape, or form in the control and management of keys, you should find another cloud service provider. So taking those two together, we'll analyze those. And my favorite one is, would you give your keys to your home to someone you don't know? A very interesting analogy for this, but one that hopefully I'll show you that it's really way off base. And if you want to argue with me, that's the reason why I'm putting these things out there in the public domain, because as I have spent 3 years of my life having these discussions with customers, I've found that there's no one in the public space that I'll say is an authority, and that could be someone like Bruce Schneier, for example, or somebody at NIST, somebody in the government perhaps, that's taking these things and analyzing them and going back out, say, in these periodicals and breaking down those arguments and saying, you know, this argument that was published over here doesn't really seem to hold water, which I think would be the journalistic thing to do, you know, to have kind of both sides of the coin. So I'm trying to take that position. I'm not claiming to be perfect. What I'm hoping to do is to have more people in the world who are reading these things and questioning them and able to go out back into your organizations. And when you hear statements that are just kind of like almost, you know, little bombs that are dropped into conversations that try and just kind of settle the discussion right away, that you can say, you know, actually, it's not that simple, or that's not really, you know, maybe an accurate portrayal of how this works, and have that discussion within your own organizations. So the first one, regulatory requirements. I'll ask anyone in here, want to try like true or false on this? Anybody know of a regulation that requires that you, a regulatory body that requires that you own your own key? Okay, so about 6 months ago, I did something similar to this talk, and the answer was zero, and my answer was false, just flat out false. And since then, I've had to update my answer, and I get to choose how the answers go here. So I chose 99.9% false. And the reason is that since, you know, about 6 months ago, the regulators of banking in Israel have now published a regulation that requires that financial institutions in Israel possess, manage, control their own encryption keys for cloud services use. So that's the only instance that I know of, and I've probably done, you know, as much analysis of the regulations around the world as anybody has in this space. So it's basically a false statement unless you're a bank in Israel. And so thus, I only know of a single known instance. And really, compliance, you know, when we talk about regulation, we're really talking about your compliance regime, is, except for Israel, is a self-imposed requirement. So you have the power to influence that, even if you're not in the compliance, you know, department or group at your company, to be able to go to them and say, you know, you're giving us a solution requirement rather than a problem statement to solve when you tell us that we have to do an implementation detail. Okay, so encryption ownership, key ownership is an implementation detail and not a problem to solve. And that goes back to, are you solving, you know, do you have a clear problem that you're trying to solve? And then I feel like I have to add, in addition to this, that because it bolsters the discussion with a compliance group that might be trying to institute this requirement based on some perceived regulatory thing, that IT should be able to tell them, you know, even if we did this, this can potentially be a dangerous thing, because I've been around PKI, encryption, key management for about 20 years now, including some big, you know, big systems at Microsoft, and it is almost universally poorly funded, very specialized skill set, typically kind of old and creaky because it's poorly funded and because people are hard to find. And therefore, it's kind of a risky business to be in because most companies don't do it particularly well. So, you know, another argument for saying, you know, let's not run down this path of solution as requirement for this reason, as well as for the fact that we don't necessarily have to do it. The second one, and this had those corollaries, is encryption allows me to control all access to my data. Now, true or false? I hear false. Nobody says true. Well, I would say it is true, it can be true, but it's really highly a questionable statement. If you hear that or read that statement, it's extremely highly questionable, because you can use encryption for access control. And the simple way to think about that, I think, is if I take my personal data, and it could be corporate data, and I back it up, and I put it onto a drive, and I protect that drive, I encrypt it, and I have the key, and if it's my stuff, I might want to send that USB drive to my brother who lives in Indiana. I'm in Seattle. That way, earthquakes, natural disasters, and including theft and my house burning down, I'm protected. He's got that data too. But if I've encrypted it and I didn't share the key with him, and I need one of the files off of that backup that I maybe accidentally deleted, and call my brother and say, send me that file, and he says, I don't have access to any of your data. Well, I have a choice there. If I want to allow any access to my data, then encryption doesn't, you know, that either I have to share the key, in which case I'm sharing the entire scope of data that's protected by that key and not that one file that I wanted back, right? So I need to integrate encryption with some kind of identity-based access control system, okay? Which leads to this kind of principle that the control scope and the key scope have to match. So I'd need to have a key for every file that I had backed up, and then just give him the key to that particular file right? So having a key that doesn't match the control scope makes it unlikely that you're going to be capable or willing reasonably to share a key with someone, right? So I was thinking about, you know, in the real world, you have things like, you know, a house cleaning service. You want to give them a key, but maybe you've got your passports and $10,000 in cash in the house, and you don't want them to have access to that. So maybe you buy a safe, and you have a key or a combination of that safe. And when you give them the key to your house, you don't give them the key to the other things that you don't want to have access to, right? So that's saying the key scope needs to match the control scope. So BYOK prevents cloud personnel from accessing. There's so much implicit in this statement, so much assumed and implicit in this statement. And again, is it true, false, or somewhere in between? Nobody's going to guess, huh? Okay. It's in between, but I would say it's actually clearer than highly questionable. It's false for SaaS. It could be true for IaaS, and it may be able to be true for PaaS. But when you buy a software service, you want the features of the service, just like you want the features of a PaaS service or an IaaS service, right? But an IaaS service could be something that's just purely like block storage. Again, you want to back up all your corporate data to the cloud, and you just want to have it encrypted, and you don't want the cloud to ever give you back anything but all the data that was encrypted with that key scope. Then you'd BYOK into IaaS, and you could say it prevents cloud personnel from accessing my data because I encrypted it before I put it into the cloud and I have the key. But if you want to use SaaS, and notice I haven't said Microsoft, Office 365, nothing Microsoft specific so far, and I won't today. Jacqueline will talk about Microsoft specific stuff. I'm talking about anything in the cloud. If you want to use the features of Salesforce or Google Apps or CRM Online or your favorite malware protection service, every one of those SaaS services has to be able to reason over the data. It has to be able to compute against the contents. So it has to be able to read the attachment and see if the attachment is malicious, if it's a malware prevention and detection service. And if it's your email service and you've got archive legal hold rules that need to be executed to archive things that are, you know, part of a court case your company's involved in, then the content has to be scanned in order to determine if it triggers that legal hold or archival. So it's false for SaaS because if you're using SaaS as SaaS, then SaaS is reading your data to be able to reason over it to give you even most basic of features like search for something like SharePoint or Box or Exchange Online. So in that case, key ownership, right, BYOK prevents cloud personnel, O being kind of the fundamental concept there, ownership doesn't do anything for you with respect to cloud personnel accessing your data in that BYOK and with SaaS, because the SaaS service itself has access to your data in unencrypted form at some point. So if it has it in unencrypted form at some point, then human beings could access that content, you know, at the point where it's unencrypted. So it's not about key ownership. Okay, the ability to decrypt the data is what matters. So the fact that the cloud service, the SaaS service, has to decrypt the data to perform its functions is what's pertinent in arguing that this statement is really not true. Okay, at that point, what matters is your contractual terms with the cloud provider and also the legislative or legal constraints or domain in which that, you know, cloud operator operates, as well as the data residency of the cloud service. Those are the pertinent things. If you change that to key ownership equals control, does that change the situation? And there are some products on the market that look like they change this from just a key ownership situation to a key control situation. Well, they only apply, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, if the owner can reasonably execute that control. So again, if the scope of the key, let's imagine you've got all of your data in Box, you've got 6 petabytes of data in Box, and they're protected by a single encryption key. And let's imagine here for a second. You've got an employee who has decided to do something illegal, you know, criminal action. And the internal sort of like auditors find out about it and they go, we could be in a lot of trouble here. Is there a way we can get that, just that email or those two documents so that the cloud service provider can't see them, right? But all of the data, that 6 petabytes of data, is protected by a single key. So your choice is rip that key away and our entire like Box or SharePoint or whatever, you know, service unavailable because the data can't be read by the service provider anymore. So that's a case where, again, you can't reasonably exert control over that ability to exercise the BYOK, so it's really not true again. And again, key scope has to match the control scope. But what if every key or every document, instead of 6 petabytes, one encryption key, what if it was 6 million files and every file had its own key and you could control the ability for the cloud service to access that key? So Box comes along every, let's say, 8 hours and wants to build a search index over your 6 million files that you've stored there. And in order to build the search index, it's got to actually reason and parse against the contents of the files, right? So it's got to be able to unencrypt them. So every 8 hours, every employee that owns a file in Box gets a pop-up that says, can Box decrypt your file? Can it have the key to do this, right? And this is where the large numbers and human capabilities come in, right? So it's more reasonable, I would say, to think about there might be a very small amount of data in your company that you want to protect in that way, and you could do it with something, say, like rights management, where you apply that function to a very small amount of data, and you leave that data in this domain of, we're willing to take the hit if one of those pieces of data needs to be exposed in some way. So we have a very, very small, you know, kind of sample size there. And I would go back to, in this, what is the problem you're trying to solve? If you're saying BYOK is intended to prevent access to my content and it's a SaaS service, then you've already missed the question of what's the problem you're trying to solve, because you said, I want to use BYOK to prevent access, but the problem you actually want to solve is I just don't want the cloud service provider to have access to my content. How can we accomplish that? And BYOK, I'm saying, is not the answer. It may or may not be the answer in any case. And I'll illustrate that. I'll run through this really quickly because I've already sort of painted this picture, right? You get an email, it comes into your email service, whoever they are. You want them to analyze the contents to prevent you from getting compromised, so it's got to analyze the contents. Then it needs to analyze the email to execute your own business rules for whether it's, you know, files or email or even instant messaging content. Then it's delivered to your mailbox. The cloud service now can encrypt it for you. And it may chain up to a key that you own, but it's doing the encryption within the cloud service. Writes that encrypted data to storage. Then you request the mail, and it doesn't have to be, you know, the user. It could be an e-discovery process. Any kind of access that anyone in your company has to come through the storage layer with a client and get access to it. What has to happen? Well, it's encrypted, so the cloud service has to decrypt that content and then deliver it back to the client. So this is, you know, a simple way of illustrating the flaw, one of the fundamental flaws in trying to use encryption as access control. So this one, okay, fact checker says, I lock my car, I leave the keys in the door. How, you know, true or false is that for like BYOK, if you share the key, is equal to this analogy? Think it's true? Okay. Well, I'm saying it's false again for SaaS, okay? Because, again, you need to share the data, right? You lock the car because the contents are the car itself and the contents of the car you want to be off limits. But if you don't share the contents with the SaaS provider, then you don't really get the SaaS service. So it's a false analogy for SaaS, but it's interesting to examine this statement kind of in another facet, which is, why do we lock our car and why don't we leave the keys in the door? Well, it's really about criminals. I mean, if I walk by your car and the keys are in the door, I'm not going to steal your car, okay? I've got a nice life, I like my job at Microsoft, I'm not gonna turn criminal because I see your keys are available and maybe you have a nice Mercedes or something. You know, I've got my own car, I don't need yours. So it's really about criminals, okay? If you think that your cloud service provider, remember, this is, they're saying the equivalent is locking your keys in the door, or putting your keys in the door and locking the car. They're equating this external entity as the cloud service provider. So if you think your cloud service provider is a criminal, you probably should find a different cloud service provider, right? That's what we're saying here is I gave my key to the provider and now they have access to the car and the contents, but unless they're a criminal, they're not making off with it, right? So just beware of signing up with criminal enterprises is really the lesson I take away from that. Okay. We want to control access, I said, to the inside of the car. Maybe the author, this was one I pulled out of a publication, and the attribution is in the slides at the front. Maybe that journalist meant more like a valet service. I think someone mentioned the valet service or the mechanic, right? Well, valets are human. This is today anyways. And we, and I'm not gonna say this is just Microsoft, but cloud services can be architected so that humans don't need access to the car or the contents of the car in order to operate the service that they run. So there's a disparity in the analogy in that respect. But also, even if you did share your keys with a valet service, you're still protected against criminals, right? They have possession of your car with the keys, but again, unless they turn criminal, then they're doing what you expect them to do with it, right? So if the analogy holds, then you're saying, I just expect my cloud service provider to do with my stuff what they've committed contractually, legally to do with my stuff. So it's, again, it's kind of a not a great analogy from that point of view. In the orange, yes, sir. And I can repeat the question, but please elaborate on that. It's not your car.
It's a rental car. It's SaaS, right? I'm renting it right now. It's not my car. So, and called a hotel room, right? I'm away and the police show up and they say, we need to search these four rooms. And they say, here is a subpoena. And they go, well, I'm under no obligation to call the people whose stuff is in that room or in that car, but I have a key, so I'm gonna unlock the door and let you go in and rifle through things. Now, that's not somebody being a thief. That's someone who has, you know, got a legal claim against the company, or that's somebody that's the government with some kind of a request. And I know that's been a lot in the news lately. So that's why I'm bringing this up here, as if I have the keys, they can come in, the SaaS provider can give them access to anything they want, they're not going to be able to do anything with it until they contact me, who's the owner of the information that's there.
Thanks for raising that. And I've spent probably more, maybe a year of my life with our legal. I have some wonderful attorneys at Microsoft that help me and, you know, help all of us think about these things. And I've spent an inordinate amount of time with them, and I won't go into legal instruments and the facets of that, but I will say it's still not a correct analogy at all, because you don't say I'm not going to leave my keys in the car, you know, and lock the car because I'm worried about someone serving me with a warrant, right? That they're going to get into my car, right? If the police come with a warrant, it doesn't matter whether your keys are there or not. You're going to go get the keys and open the car. So it's, again, it's not this idea of I lock my car but I leave the keys in the door serves no purpose in that particular scenario. I agree with you that there's a difference between someone else being served and you being served, but there's no difference in the end result just because you left the keys in the door of the car is really what I'm saying. So we can argue separately about the legal aspects of cloud service providers. And I'm not arguing with you even about that. You're correct. It just doesn't hold water with this particular analogy. And we'll probably have some time for good Q&A. Plus, I will be down on the floor, probably Jacqueline too. We have technically 5 to 6, so I'll try and run there as fast as I can after the session. And I'll be down, and we'll probably both be under the apps and data big sign at one of the big Microsoft areas. It probably is the productivity area, and I'll be happy to go run and get you a beer and debate the legal or other aspects of this talk during that.
The booth is MS60.
All right, yes, it's 60 is the booth. So, and of course, when you're done with the valet service, you take your keys back too. You know when you stop sharing them, and you would assume that they didn't make a copy of the key while you were, eating dinner or what have you. So this is my favorite one, and this is the last one that I'll examine. Would you give your keys to your home to someone you don't know? Well, I would say this actually doesn't fall into any of the previous categories. It's not true, it's not false. It's actually just a terrible analogy. Because even if you think about like the plumber or the house cleaning service, right, an electrician, whomever, you have a relationship with those people. The people that you would actually give your keys to. I mean, no one thinks, I don't know anyone that would think that I would just walk to some random stranger in a mall and say, here's a key to my house. So they must be talking about something else. But we do that. If by stranger they mean, like, I don't know the electrician that's going to come to my house while I'm at work, but I have a relationship, a legal relationship, with that firm or that person that's supposed to protect me for what they do, while they have access to the thing that they have. And a cloud service with which you have a contract, I won't even say Microsoft, Amazon, Google, they're companies that you know. They're not strangers. And when you sign that contract, you become far less than strangers, right? You become very specifically obliged to each other to do particular things. So it's kind of a ridiculous statement, but this is one, I read this in a periodical, and for the life of me, I haven't been able to go back and find where I read this. I copied it down and I didn't write that. If you wanna search the web and find it, and email me and tell me where it popped up, I'd be happy about that. If you want to understand like what I'm saying here about contracts, it's one of the oldest forms of any kind of written thing that humans have created, and there's umpteen thousands and millions of pages of laws there, and contract law is one of the oldest forms of law to exist. So this is not about giving your key to a stranger. This is about Are you going to be willing to share your key with somebody with whom you have a solid contract? So maybe the thing that you should be doing is looking at your contract. And here we are. Good contracts have clear obligations. I think the company I work for has a really good, solid contract. Then the other aspect is, for most people, me included, I could loan my key to, a contractor, and I don't have any way of logging when they showed up and when they left. I'd like to have that function, but I haven't done it yet, haven't done anything about it yet, so I don't know, if people are using it or not. So again, false analogy. If you give your key to a cloud service provider, then cloud service providers should be logging every action that takes place with that key and broadening that concept, because if we go back to, can you clearly state the problem you're trying to solve? Yeah. The problem you're trying to solve isn't, tell me when the cloud uses my key. The problem you really want to solve is, tell me anytime the cloud personnel have access to my data. And maybe having access to the key doesn't mean access to the data. And maybe there's other scenarios where access to data happen that don't have anything to do with the key. So even if they answer your question with, we'll tell you the answer to when your key is accessed, that doesn't necessarily tell you when your data is accessed. So really stating the problem you want to solve is, tell me whenever you touch, you have access to my data. So I'll say, what are the facts according to Paul Rich? I don't claim to be the, you know, like perfect computer that calculated everything, and I might have made mistakes. So these are the facts that I've come up with over several years of examining this. First is, if you hear BYOK, you have to have some context to that, because the dynamics with IaaS, PaaS, SaaS, or other forms of cloud services are different. So BYOK in a vacuum is somewhat useless. Second is, there's lots of public statements about this that are, I shouldn't say very misleading. They might not be intentionally so, but maybe they're not well thought out. So I would say, if you're reading something in a journal of some kind, unless it's like maybe an IEEE or some kind of super wonky people that whose lives are about encryption, you're probably reading information that's been ultra distilled, overly simplified, and isn't accurate. It isn't going to lead you to good conclusions. So, and the next one is, go back to, solutions often don't meet business needs when the problem isn't really clearly defined. I'm not saying encryption isn't useful. It's pervasive in cloud services and very well should be. It just usually it solves other problems that are not the problem that the person presenting it as a solution is trying to solve. It's a great solution for, you know, other reasons, not necessarily the sort of BYOK aspect. And then without knowing where data gets encrypted and decrypted, just saying encryption, or again, BYOK, is largely meaningless. So you have to, you know, be able to dig further and ask those questions if someone in the conference room or at your dinner party says, you know, encryption, it could be, you know, some public policy thing that you're discussing about consumer encryption. It's still the same rules apply. So I mentioned about key ownership, which also this last one, the corollary of that is the scope of the key and the control that you want to exercise have to match in order for you to be able to do this. And then lastly, if you're using SaaS at least, and you want to use the features, then what you should really be focusing on are the contractual commitments, the features that the cloud service offers to protect your data and to give access control transparency to you, the telemetry that underpins that tells you what's going on, and of course the applicable law for where the data is being stored and processed. So, okay, with that, that's all the dinner party conversation. Love to debate those things. But we'll switch gears. And before I turn this over to Jacqueline, I wanted to illustrate, mainly I'm talking about today at rest, and Jacqueline's going to talk about at rest. Some of the things that I alluded to are in the device and the content areas. And those might be things like PGP, SMIME, RMS. But today, we're focused here and for the rest of this, just solely on the at-rest encryption piece. So I wanted to set that context. There's other sessions on the access control, the device, the content. You know, there's RMS sessions, there's EMS sessions. And I wanted to kind of also set the stage with BYOK isn't new at all. In fact, it's decades old, I would say, because for probably 20 years, we've had the SMIME standard, which allows you to provision your own certificate or a corporate certificate on your end device, encrypt the content, BYOK, and then, you know, share your public key with other people and have them be able to read that. So that's an instance of BYOK that's been around for a long time. Things like Microsoft RMS have allowed you to BYOK for some flavors for a very long time, others are newer. You also have, now CRM Online has already announced that they're allowing BYOK for like TDS or SQL content type of encryption with customer keys. You've also got other products in the marketplace like content encryption gateways that claim a model of BYOK. And in addition to that, for as long as at least the military's been encrypting content, you've had network link encryptors that have customer keys being used to encrypt content that's being transmitted. So there's all kinds of BYOK, and that I illustrate those things too, because it further, I think, reinforces that the term BYOK or HYOK or CYOK are almost meaningless. And that's what happens to a word in the language that becomes so meaningful, like 14 different meanings. At that point, it doesn't really mean anything unless you add the context around it. Now I'll point out the problem's getting worse. So we already have BYOK vagueness, but it's only going to get worse because just in Microsoft, in the next probably 18 months, 2 years, you'll see more and more and more BYOK offerings hit the marketplace, and I'm sure that will happen with other cloud services. So the term BYOK is going to get harder and harder and harder to parse. We just recently had some announcements with Azure RMS adding more BYOK capabilities. There are other ISVs that have entered the marketplace, software stack only, sitting in cloud, that do BYOK type functionality. I won't name names, but they're sort of like, they could be browser plugins, or they could be proxies that you send your content to. So there's more of that kind of BYOK. There's new device form factors that allow the key to be held in different ways, before coming into the cloud. So the definitions are blurring even further. And on top of the technology changing, the laws and regulations are changing. I fully expect, and I track the defense industry and the US government laws, as well as the financial services and other highly regulated verticals, there will be regulators that are gonna publish more requirements than just Israel banking that are gonna try and define this in some way. So it's gonna get even more and more convoluted, and again, provide more dinner party conversation, possibilities there. So, lastly, we're gonna complicate it even further because Jacqueline's gonna tell you about what we're planning on doing with Office 365 and the features that we're planning on shipping.
So we're introducing a new feature in Office 365 for many of the workloads, as well as we're going to be, as Paul was saying, introducing them for other features in the Office 365 world as well. Today I'm going to be talking to you about what we're calling advanced encryption. So we're going to talk about what it is, what's the value, and why would you care. Ensure that the use case is clear. And again, Paul talked a lot about why would I want it? What problem am I trying to solve? Is this really going to solve the problem that I'm trying to solve? And consider the risk of BYOK. So he talked about keys and encryption and being able to encrypt a large amount of data with the same key. And for example, when he gave his brother the backup that he had, but only was able to get the entire amount of that data back instead of that single file, think about losing that key entirely, and then all of that data is gone, not just that single file. Or in our case, for Exchange, it would be the single mailbox. Advanced encryption with BYOK enhances data encryption at rest. So today, we currently are encrypting data at rest with BitLocker. So the disks in the Office 365 space are encrypted with BitLocker, and that, of course, is at the disk layer. With advanced encryption, what we're doing is we're putting additional steps and using service code to encrypt data. In Exchange, that would be at the mailbox level. In SharePoint, it will be at the site collection level. And so if there is the same scenario where BitLocker is saving you from, if somebody was able to break into the data center, pull a disk, shove it into another machine, right? BitLocker would prevent them from being able to get the data on the disk. However, if there was some rogue admin that actually had perms onto that box, and they actually had the permissions to get on it, and they were logged into it, they could copy a file off of it, right? And that if that file was not encrypted, or the data inside of those files were not encrypted, they would be able to get that data as well. So this is the problem that we're trying to solve. Advanced encryption with BYOK is made up of two things. So encryption via, again, like I said, SharePoint and Exchange service code. So we're actually writing it into the Office 365 version, the data center version of the code, so that that is encrypted in the Office 365 service. The other thing is, Paul was saying, BYOK, the ability to bring your own key. So optionally, the customer can own their own root keys, and that will allow them to have access to the root and then the entire keychain for them to control that. So if the customer deletes the key or revokes access to the key, then Office 365 would no longer be able to decrypt that data. So what's the value of the feature? So it's a very effective defense against logical and physical threats. So like I said, there's a strong separation of the Windows Server's administrators and the customer data. So with it being encrypted, again, if there was a Windows Server administrator that could get onto the box and copy a file off, they still wouldn't be able to access the data that's in that file. Additional protection against physical threats. So again, if the customer was able to, or if a rogue admin was able to get that disk out, put it into another machine, they would have an additional threat protection, because if maybe they were able to get the BitLocker key somehow, they still couldn't get access to the data that was on that disk. And it's effective regardless of who manages the key. So in Office 365, what we're going to be doing is encrypting all data at rest, whether or not the customer opts into BYOK, or bring your own key. So we're going to use Microsoft managed keys to encrypt all the data, unless the customer decides to BYOK, to bring their own key, and then they will have access to control that root key. So when they are able to have that root key be possessed by them, if the keys are revoked, then none of the content that is encrypted with that particular data will be able to be accessed by Office 365. The customer will own and manage the keys in Azure Key Vault. So today, we support only keeping the keys in Azure Key Vault. So if you have an on-premises HSM, you can upload your key into Azure Key Vault, and then we will use the key that you uploaded, not the one from your on-premises HSM. The customer can choose the assignment of keys. So later on, I'll be talking about how you actually do this, but you'll be creating what we're calling a data encryption policy. You'll be assigning that policy particular mailboxes, and you control which data encryption policy gets assigned to which mailboxes and therefore tied to which root keys that you own. Customers can use the keys that they generate or they import. So like I said, if you have an on-premises HSM, you can upload your key into Azure Key Vault, or you can create a key in Azure Key Vault using the Azure Key Vault service. You can roll your keys at will, so a customer can go in and roll their key to a new version, and then you run a commandlet in exchange to let us know that you've rolled that key, and then we will use that new version of the key. So if you believe that your key was compromised, you can roll to a new key, and we will then encrypt the mailboxes with that new version. You can also revoke access to your key. So with our particular feature, advanced encryption, for all workloads as well as the other Azure applications that are going to be using it, the use case, so our supported scenario for revoking your key, is if you decide to leave the Office 365 service. So let's say you have an Exchange deployment and you have the keys, you decided to BYOK and you own the keys. When you decide to leave the EXO service is when we're supporting you revoking your key. So what is the scope of advanced encryption? So it's customer data at rest, like Paul talked about. All Exchange Online mailboxes will be encrypted. And this includes Skype data. So most Skype data is also saved into the Exchange mailbox. So if you have a conversation and that's saved into your conversation history, that is in your Exchange mailbox, that will also be encrypted. For SharePoint data, or for OneDrive for Business, so OneDrive for Business data is stored in SharePoint, right? So with those, it's the content databases that will be encrypted at the site collection level. And that means that any data that is stored in SharePoint Online will be encrypted. If you opt into BYOK, then it will be encrypted with your own key. So there's some FAQs that we wanted to share with you guys about how this will work for you. So does advanced encryption impact the Office 365 features? There's many customers who are highly concerned about impacting features that they have today in the service by encrypting their data, either using a BYOK key or by Microsoft encrypting their data for them and owning the keys. So it does not. So let me describe how that works in Exchange. So in Exchange, we are encrypting the data down at the database level, the ESC level, JET, and everything above that is decrypted from the advanced encryption point of view. So you will see that from here, any client or service that needs to have access to the data will get that in the clear from the advanced encryption point of view. Of course, there's still, you know, SSL, TLS, et cetera, S/MIME above that. However, from the advanced encryption point of view, when we have encrypted it at the JET layer, will be decrypted from the rest of the services that need access to that data. Does advanced encryption with BYOK block Microsoft engineers from accessing my content? So if you revoke the key, of course it will, but of course, again, it will, if you revoke the key, it will allow nobody to have access to any of the data that was encrypted with those keys. And so we want to ensure that customers understand that if they revoke their keys, that nobody can have access to that data. Microsoft can't, and neither can you, or whoever owns that particular mailbox or site collection. And even while permissions to use your keys are in place, so for BYOK, even if you do that, other security controls ensure that your data is protected from insider threats. So we have other services and features that will protect your data. This isn't working. Okay, there. When will all customer content be encrypted in the Office 365 service using advanced encryption? So they already started doing this in SharePoint. So about a year ago, 100% of the data in SharePoint was already encrypted. They are working on the BYOK feature now. In EXO, we started to encrypt data at the end of last year. And currently, the dog food scope is in the thousands. And at the time we wrote this slide, that was true, and now we're in the tens of thousands of mailboxes encrypted in dog food. After public launch, new customers will get it automatically. So like I said, we are going to encrypt all mailboxes in the service, whether or not the customer owns their own key. So when a tenant is moved into the service, we will be encrypting those mailboxes using the Microsoft-owned key, and then if the customer opts into BYOK, we will then encrypt the mailboxes with their keys. So it's a major service change, right? So we want to make sure that we're being cautious and in our projections, and we don't have a target end date for the EXO deployment today. The reason for that is in order to encrypt a mailbox, you have to move the mailbox. So the entire structure of the mailbox is encrypted, so the columns, the tables, everything in a mailbox. So we need to move it to create a new instance of the mailbox encrypted. And then in order for us to get the data in, it comes across MRS in the clear and then goes into the mailbox written down at the JET layer in the encrypted version. So that being said, as you know, we have millions of mailboxes in the service. And in order to move all of the mailboxes in the service to be encrypted, this is going to take us some time. So we want to be cautious about how we're doing that. Which keys do customers manage with the BYOK version? So this is how the structure works for the key hierarchy. So at the very top is what we call root keys. The root key in the BYOK scenario are the ones that are owned by the customer. We then have a set of scope keys. So when you actually upload your key into Azure Key Vault, you're uploading it into the HSMs that exist in Azure Key Vault. Those keys never leave the Azure Key Vault service. You give the EXO identity, in the case of Exchange, permissions to that particular key for only wrap and unwrap operations. So we send you our scope key when you create a data encryption policy. We send the scope key up into Azure Key Vault for a wrap operation. That key gets wrapped, the data blob gets sent back to Exchange, and we save that data blob off. Then later, when we need to create an encrypted mailbox, we create a mailbox key for that mailbox when the mailbox, again, moves to another database. The mailbox key is wrapped with the scope key, And in order to get the scope key in the clear, we have to go up into Azure Key Vault to do an unwrap operation. So because there's this key chain and hierarchy, in order for us to be able to unwrap this mailbox key, we have to be able to get to the root key. So the customer, if they opt in to BYOK, will own that relationship for us to be able to have access to the wrap and unwrap of that key. So I have on here that you have data encryption policy 1 all the way up to N. Today, we're allowing customers to have 50 different data encryption policies. We don't want them to have a particular policy per mailbox. We want you guys to create what we're calling compliance groups. So those can either be by, I don't know, like you have your HR department and your legal department on different keys. So you want to assign the policies to the HR department and a different policy to the legal department. Some customers are thinking about doing it by geos. So you want North America and Europe to be encrypted by different policies. That's why we're allowing for a different number of customers. So one of our largest customers that's in our preview program, I originally said you can have 10. They said, how about 50? I said, all right, 50. Because they're so large, we don't expect to have more customers want more than that number. They have about 800,000 seats. What does advanced encryption with BYOK look like? So let me give you the topology of how this works. All right, everyone technical? Everyone ready for this? Okay. Okay, so you have work. Basically going to describe this as three separate clouds, right? So you have where the customer is, where the Azure Key Vault service is, so that's Azure, and then Office 365. So those are three separate entities. When you create your tenant in Office 365, it lives in a particular place in Office 365. And then if you have an on-premises HSM, that of course lives on the customer side. So the first step is for the customer to create their key vaults in Azure and ensure that they're in the proper locations that they want them to be. So let's say you're creating those data encryption policies for Europe. You're going to want to create those key vaults also in Europe. You then either import or you create the keys inside of those key vaults. So what we want you to do is, because of the possible accidental deletion or expiration of a key, what we have all the policies is two keys on each one. So when you create the data encryption policy, we want you to have two separate keys that are on that data encryption policy, because if we can't get to one, we'll try the other. This is also for the rogue admin scenario, in case the credentials of a particular administrator was compromised. Perhaps the other subscription was not also compromised, so those keys would still exist and the data would still be accessible. We want to ensure that customers understand, again, this is a ticking time bomb, right? So you need to make sure that your keys are secure, as well as all their credentials for each one of the subscriptions, as well as any of the administrators that you have assigned to owning these keys. So when you create a subscription, what we want is for each subscription to have separate administrators. If it's possible in your organization to create separate administrators for each one of these, it would save us a lot of grief, again, because of the rogue admin scenario. Also, we want to ensure that we create things like non-expiring keys, because, like, let's say admin A leaves the company and admin B takes over, and they had no idea when the expiration date happened. The key expires, and then all the data is inaccessible that was encrypted with that key. We really don't want that to happen, right? So step three. Now we're moving on to the steps that the exchange administrator would do. So the exchange administrator gets the URLs, the URIs, to those particular keys that were created by the Azure administrators. They create what we're calling a data encryption policy, and that gets created within their tenant in the Office 365 service. Once that data encryption policy is created, what happens on the back end is we actually do that in Office 365. We create a scope key. We send the scope key up into Azure Key Vault. That does a wrap operation, sends us back the data blob. We store that so we know how to get that scope key back. And then the particular exchange administrator then assigns that policy to the mailboxes. So once that particular policy is assigned to the mailboxes and that mailbox again moves, then that mailbox will be encrypted with the keys that are associated with that particular data encryption policy. And lastly, then, anytime anybody needs access to the data in that mailbox, we need to decrypt that mailbox key. So that key is wrapped with the scope key, so we've got to get the scope key in the clear. We only have the version of the scope key that's wrapped with the root key. We have to get that in the clear, so we had to send it up to Azure Key Vault again to do an unwrap operation. How will I configure my keys in Office 365? So again, we want you to have two different Azure subscriptions. We're calling that subscription 2 and subscription 3. The reason for that is because your EXO tenant will live in a subscription as well. We're calling that subscription 1. So you're going to create two separate subscriptions, subscription 2, subscription 3, and you're going to create key vaults and keys in each one of those subscriptions, and you're going to create data encryption policies based off of those subscriptions. So let's say for a new data encryption policy for the United States, let's say this particular customer wants to do it by geos. We create a data encryption policy using particular keys and key vaults. So let's say we use key 1 from subscription 2, and then we use key 2 from subscription 3. Those two keys are in different Azure subscriptions, so we are, again, with different administrators, so we're saving ourselves from that rogue admin scenario. Let's say later on they want to create another data encryption policy for Europe. We add other data, we create new keys, each one of them in the same subscriptions that we already have, except one of them is in subscription 2, one of them is in subscription 3. So now we have two data encryption policies, and when we want to assign those to mailboxes, we then assign those to mailboxes using the set-mailbox commandlet. Now, just because a user is in Europe doesn't mean that they have to get data encryption policy for the United States or for Europe, because you can change those around. Like, let's say a user wants to move from one place to another, then they can get moved between policies. Question?
Can there be different subscription
donors? That's what we're recommending, yes. The subscription owners for each subscription are different from each other.
So one could be an owner 2 based on Europe, and subscription owner 3 based on the US?
No. Because we want the data encryption policies to span the two subscriptions, right? So for back on this slide, for subscription 1, you want one of the keys for data encryption policy for the USA and one of the keys for the encryption policy for Europe.
Right? Let me elaborate too. I think I understand your question is, how can I map keys and vaults to the subscription owners, to the geos that I want to map them to? It's up to you. So we're illustrating on this how someone might do it, but another customer might have multiple subscriptions per, instead of just one in the US and one in Europe, or one, you know, where they have a US key and a Europe key, they may divide them by US administrators, Europe administrators. So this is showing a possibility. It is not a requirement at all. If you want to have 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 subscriptions, the requirement that we have is 2 keys per policy. And we recommend that each of those keys have separate administrators. So how you determine to lay out your, you could have 60 Azure subscriptions for combining key vaults with up to 50 data encryption policies. So it's highly flexible.
The key vaults that are in a subscription can be from any region.
Right.
So you can have a subscription that has key vaults in Asia, Europe, US, et cetera. So they can be in multiple regions in the same subscription.
What I understand, so if one of my partner organization in the US and one in different region and third region, each one of us can have ownership of each individual subscription. So by that way, we have control of the keys and we manage this way instead of having all the subscription and the owner in one region.
Right. So to restate the question, you want to have the owners of the keys in the key vaults be separate per region. And like I said, the way that you decide to configure or administer this is completely flexible. The only constraint we have is you must provide us with two keys for each key policy. And how those keys are instantiated and managed is up to you. We're just making recommendations for how you do that so that you do not have the risk of having a single administrator that can burn down all of your keys and all of your key vaults that apply to any data encryption policy.
So one more question for that. So since you said minimum two, can it be more than two?
Today, it's required and limited to two keys per data encryption policy. The question was, can it be more than two? And the answer right now is no. All right, we'll hold the rest of the QA since we only have 10 minutes or so left and Jacqueline's got a little bit more to get to.
I'm trying to decide like what is the most important stuff to talk about since we only have 10 minutes left. So practical considerations, again, we want to have the shared nothing administrative goal. We just talked about that, having separate administrators for the separate subscriptions. Again, non-expiring keys because you want to know when you're going to lose access to your mailboxes. So if it expires in 10 years from now and you forget, then all your mailboxes could be inaccessible at that point. Okay, so this is the same view that we showed previously, except with the two separate sets of administrators. So in this case, AJ and Rama have access to a subscription one or two, and Ying and Keb have access to subscription three. And so we're trying to show here that the Azure subscriptions have different administrators.
And to keep going with your model, in this top cloud, you could add another and another and another and another and choose all different people for every one of them. We just don't imagine that most companies can support that, because if you want to have, say, a minimum of three people administering an Azure subscription so that you don't have, a two situation where one leaves the company and now you're down to one person, and that's generally risky, most companies can't support more than a handful of people that do key management in the company. So it's up to you, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's really important that the people that are the administrators of these vaults know what they're doing with key administration, right? Because you don't want to have them go delete a key because maybe they think this key isn't encrypting anything, but they don't really know, and you accidentally cut off all your access to your mailboxes, right? And again, that's why we have two, right, for each encryption policy, just for that scenario. They're ticking time bombs. We expect a 48-hour revocation scenario. If you're exiting the service and you revoke your keys, we do have key caches, one for the scope key and one for the mailbox key. Each one of those is 24 hours, so the longest that those keys will exist is for 48 hours total. We will support a 14-day unrevoke. So if the customer accidentally revokes a key, we want to make sure that they are able to undo what they accidentally did. They would have to do this to both keys again, right? If they don't mean to do it and they need some of that data back, then they would have to reinstantiate those keys in those key vaults, give us perms back, and then within 14 days. Beyond that, we're going to have issues getting the data back. But up to about 14 days, we'll still be able to. So I want to talk a little bit about my preview program. I know customers out there are interested probably in getting to understand how this works and maybe seeing it in action. So we are in preview right now. We started it a couple of weeks ago. We had solicited for customers to join us for the preview program, and we did get nominations, and we do have several in now. We started our early adopter program back in March. And so now we're opening it up to more customers. We want to ensure that customers understand if they join our preview, it's not to achieve the BYOK compliance piece. We're not allowing for any revocation during our preview. But after we go GA, we will be supporting that scenario. So I talked about when. If you do want to join our preview, send mail to Paul or I, or again, we'll be down at the booth right after this, because we are interested to understand how many customers are actually really interested in the feature. And this is for the BYOK piece. So again, all mailboxes in the service are going to be encrypted, whether or not you choose to BYOK, but this particular preview is for the BYOK. The reasons why, what, how much time do we have? Okay. all right, so during the preview program, we really want people to come in and use the feature. So a lot of customers have been talking about, can I use a test tenant to do it in? We really want customers to have mail flow. We want them to be logging on to their machines that we want and mailboxes. We want them to be able to understand how it works and kind of work around using and actually implementing the feature. And so it's a tenant. We're requiring a tenant that is used. We haven't exactly set what that use case is yet, but it will be Mailflow comes in, mailboxes log in, and you have at least one encrypted mailbox in that service, but everything else still has to be working as well. So other mailboxes being logged into as well as the one that's encrypted. You can have many more mailboxes encrypted, but that's our minimum requirement, of course, is one.
All right, so I said at the outset that you're going to get increased credibility, and everybody in technology likes to be, sometimes it's just instinct, sometimes maybe it's more than that. You like to be able to interject into something and know something that someone else doesn't know, so I was hoping to help enhance that capability. And not get fooled, and thus the maybe the who music will stick with you if you don't remember anything else. Don't get fooled. I would say don't believe practically anything you read in a periodical about encryption today. That's kind of a strong statement, but I mean it's helpful to read those things, but it's not helpful to then try and apply them. You know, just take like that as a template and just try and apply it. It's better to go to either the provider, the product, the service provider, and then take what they're saying and look at that through a critical eye as well. And so I hope that I've helped you do that without having to be an encryption expert. Really, this is really about, some of it's about common sense. You know, just think about where encryption's happening, rather than just, oh, encryption, so it must be good. And help you solve the right problem. And I appreciate the contribution about the car and the subpoena, because again, if you're talking about leaving your keys in the car, the problem you're trying to solve isn't a subpoena, right? It has nothing to do with that. So think about just, are you solving the problem? Are you able to state and articulate the problem that you're trying to solve before you leap to those conclusions? And then hopefully you've learned probably a little bit more than you can retain, but all of this is recorded, so you'll have the deck about what we're planning to do and how you might get involved if you think that that's something for you. And Jacqueline and I would love it if you would evaluate this session. We may or may not come back and do more sessions if we think that the audience likes us. And if you don't, then we don't want to come back and take up your time. So fill those out. And we still have, 2 minutes? Plus we have 45 minutes at least down on the expo floor where you can come down and pester me with your legal arguments or otherwise your favorite encryption product or service. So any questions right now? Yes, sir. So the question is, for SharePoint Preview, there is no SharePoint Preview program right now.
Okay.
They don't have any announced plans for that. This is only for Exchange.
Okay.
So that's a simple one.
And the second question is, you mentioned on the SharePoint side that you're encrypting at the site collection level, but I did see in the slide it said files. Are you encrypting lists, logs, all that stuff?
So the question is clarifying that site collection versus files. SharePoint is encrypting at the file level. We're talking about the keys that SharePoint owns. and the level of key granularity. Right. So think about on the service side, not the BYOK piece, but on the service side, Exchange, the granularity of the like the lowest level key is the mailbox.
Yep.
But in SharePoint, it's the file, and actually it's less than a file. It's chunks of files.
Yeah, they do chunks.
Partial files. But the control scope of the customer
the BYOK.
In Exchange will be a single mailbox, because you can map a single mailbox to a single Exchange data encryption policy. But today, the smallest scope for SharePoint when they launch right now is planned to be the site collection. So even though they have smaller granularity in their key space, the customer control is only at the site collection. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Why would I ever revoke
the
key?
So the question is, why would I ever revoke a key? It's really, I think, quite simple. If you want to have a contractual commitment with a cloud service provider that says, when I leave the service, I want a technical control that will ensure that the cloud service, that any data that I leave behind, and I leave behind meaning when you leave a cloud service, they keep your data around, usually because they are obligated to do so.
Right.
Like in the contract, it says, if you leave, we'll hold your data for 30 days, 60, 90 days, mm-hmm. so that if you want to come back and get it, that you can come back and get it. And we won't access your data while you're holding it, but we'll still keep it for you. Well, if you want a technical control that says, I don't care if you keep my data, there's no way you can have access to it, and I'm confident enough when I leave that I don't ever want to ask for it again, that I'm going to take the key, and even if you hold that data for 90 days, it's encrypted and it can't be unencrypted. So it's really, again, about exiting the service and having a technical assurance that no access is possible.
And that's our supported scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You mean if the key has been revoked?
If the key is revoked?
It's not about revoking a key for a particular mailbox. It's about a particular user who does not want to be encrypted anymore.
So there won't be a choice, first of all.
We are encrypting all mailboxes in the service, whether or not the customer brings their own key.
Yeah, the question is really...
In the scenario where I have my own key.
Uh-huh.
At that point, I would encrypt my mailbox with my key, right?
Sure.
And then I wanted to decrypt with my key.
Okay. Okay, so then we will encrypt that mailbox with Microsoft own keys.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So do I have to reach out to your support, or do you
include remove the policy. So how it works is you assign a data encryption policy to a mailbox that ties it to the root keys for BYOK. If you remove that particular policy from the explicit assignment to that mailbox, we also have this thing called a tenant default. If you assign there's a tenant default assigned, it will fall back to that. If there's no tenant default assigned and there's no explicit policy assigned to a mailbox, it will fall back to the Office 365 default.
So the other likely scenario is, how long does it for example, I have probably about 10 gig of data for a single mailbox. How likely is that the whole mailbox is going to be encrypted in X number of hours, minutes, passage?
You have to move a mailbox in order for it to be encrypted. Right, it's at the cutover point. So when you move a mailbox, it's behind the scenes, right? So the mailbox moves from one database to another database. It creates the entire encryption or encrypted data, right? Columns, tables, everything in that particular mailbox, right? And then when the cutover happens, you'll be using your encrypted mailbox.
Yeah. So I think let's restate the question: is how long? But how long will it take for a mailbox to be encrypted or encrypted with a new key? Yeah.
So we have command that you can run, and we have reporting that will tell you if the mailbox is encrypted or not.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so you're right, it's a function of size, but it's really no different. In other words, there's no tax, no perceptible additional tax on moving a mailbox and encrypting the mailbox than there is today for simply moving a mailbox. So it's the same, in other words, it's the same amount of time to move a mailbox today as it will be to move a mailbox tomorrow when it's becoming encrypted in the process.
So So tenant admins don't have the ability to move mailboxes, right?
Right.
So,
right.
No.
Well, what? If the mailbox, no, if the mailbox is already in, you have to move the mailbox on the first encryption. Right.
Right? So the mailbox key then lives with that particular mailbox, and when it's on that database, the mailbox key doesn't change.
Right.
If you change the data encryption policy that mailbox is pointed to, either by explicitly assigning a new one, by having it fall back to the tenant default, or by having it fall back to the Office 365 default, we just rewrap the mailbox key. The mailbox key does not change, so all the data is still encrypted with that same mailbox key, right? So we just have to rewrap that mailbox key.
Right. We're
that
changing,
happens within about 48 hours, right. The same amount
of time.
We're changing
the key that's used in the middle of the hierarchy, not the data encryption key,
right.
when you change the assignment.
So we're changing the key encryption key, not the data encryption key, right? So you don't have to move the mailbox again.